You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined for our Wednesday episode by my co-host, Rob Rang. We're going to get started with our position-by-position review, looking at defensive tackles for the Seahawks heading into the 2021 offseason, plus our weekly mailbag. Glad to have you listening in. Let's get started. This podcast is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. We had a chance yesterday, Rob, to dive into the commentary from quarterback Russell Wilson on a number of different topics, such as potential trade rumors, his desire to be more involved in personnel decisions, and his frustration about taking sacks and pass protection issues. I want to take a step further here because when the Seahawks announced last month that Shane Waldron was the new offensive coordinator, the general consensus at the time was, this is Russell Wilson's guy. He stated as much yesterday, saying Waldron has the it factor and he expects him to have great success as a coordinator. But speaking with sources that I trust, I'm not so sure that this is necessarily being spun quite correctly. And when you start to put the pieces together a little bit, it would make some sense. These reports have come out leaking that Russell Wilson's camp is not happy with the current situation in Seattle, that there's some discontent from the player, in part because he may not necessarily have been as excited as reports originally indicated about Shane Waldron. This was the word that was used by both sources that I talked to. They said it was a lukewarm interest from Russell Wilson in Shane Waldron. I did talk with another person close to Russell Wilson's camp that had a bit more of a positive spin on this, saying he was very eager to get started with the new coordinator and that he was the right selection from the candidates that they have. But that doesn't necessarily paint a completely different picture here. He may be excited to work with Waldron. He may have been the best candidate that the Seahawks had there for the offensive coordinator position to replace Brian Schottenheimer. But now you've got to wonder, was there a certain candidate that Russell Wilson was hoping was going to be involved in this search that ultimately wasn't? And how does that impact this upcoming season?
No, I think that's a great question. Was there another candidate out there that Russell Wilson really liked? Was he a big fan of Brian Schottenheimer and didn't agree with Schottenheimer being replaced in the first place? I think those are all fair, very fair questions. Of course, Russell Wilson, doing as many interviews as he is right now, he's going to get those types of questions. And I think that sometimes it's easy for the media to take some things and spin it. And so, anybody who's listening to our show today, I think it would be wise to listen to our show yesterday as well, if you haven't already, just because we did kind of, talk about some of the things that, that some in the media are just rolling with without using all of Wilson's full quotes when he was describing his own play, for example. But at the same time, I think that it is interesting. It's one of those cases where maybe there is a little bit of fire behind all of this smoke, that perhaps Russell Wilson is not completely on board with the hiring of Shane Waldron. When we start looking at the way that the Rams play offense, this is not a club, at least the Rams, again, when Waldron was, calling a lot of the shots there, that this was not a club in LA that was taking a lot of downfield passes. And that, of course, is one of the things that Russell Wilson does best. It's one of the things that creates all the highlight reels, the kind of thing that gets you some MVP votes. And just knowing how competitive that Russell Wilson is, he may very well feel that Waldron is a lukewarm fit at best into this system and what that Russell Wilson does at best and what, frankly, that DK Metcalf does best. And so I think that there is some reason to kind of think about this a little bit. It would be interesting to know who might be some of those candidates that Russell Wilson is, excited about, or and what his true feelings are about Brian Schottenheimer. And at the same time, we all know how much of a professional that Russell Wilson is. He is as good at the microphone as any politician I've ever seen, much less any NFL football player. So I don't know that we're ever going to get that actual answer, but I do feel confident that he is very much going to be focused on trying to play his best ball, because, you know, here we are only a couple of years away when he's going to be looking for that next big contract.
And we talked about this throughout the entire process of looking for a new offensive coordinator, that whoever was picked for this position, I did not envy them, because you were going to be entering a situation where you're in the middle of what could be a tug of war battle going on between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, because we've talked about it time and time again, the comments that both these guys have made since the season ended, Russell Wilson continuing to emphasize that he wants the up-tempo offense, that he still wants to be aggressive throwing the football. Pete Carroll, he wants to get that short passing game going. He wants to run the ball more and more effectively. And he never references the idea of, you know, going more up-tempo. So you've got two different offensive visions there. It is going to be Shane Waldron's job as the middleman here to be able to design a scheme that is going to make both guys happy, that's going to marry the concepts, the visions that these guys have together. And you were hoping you would get the perfect fit there. And we've talked about it quite a bit. I think there's a lot to be enthusiastic about with Shane Waldron coming from the system that he's coming from with the Rams. I think there's a lot of interesting things from Sean McVay's system, wrinkles that they can incorporate with some of the stuff they've already done in Seattle, and they can make this offense one of the most dynamic ones in football, and it can be prolonged success if Waldron is able to make adjustments when need be and is able to counter what defenses end up doing to the Seahawks. That was the big downfall of Brian Schottenheimer that ultimately led to him parting ways with the organization. Some philosophical differences there as well. But being that middleman, you wanted it to be the perfect fit. And if Russell Wilson had another candidate in mind here, again, we don't know who that person may have been. There may have been, say, somebody like Mike Kafka from the Chiefs that was being thrown out there. He has talked about the Chiefs offense a ton in the last couple of years. Maybe he wanted somebody from that coaching tree that could come in and incorporate some wrinkles from Andy Reid's system into what the Seahawks do. There's other names that were being thrown around, but as far as the coaches that were interviewed, based on what I've been told, maybe there was hope from Russell Wilson and his camp that there would be certain candidates interviewed and they just weren't part of that process. We'll just have to see how this plays out. It's very early. If Waldron's able to get this offense rolling again, they get out to another hot start and Russell Wilson is still throwing the ball quite a bit and he is featured heavily as he has been the last couple seasons. The protection is better. That's one of the big draws to Shane Waldron. Can we protect him like they did in LA with Jared Goff? If they can do that and they're winning games, then all this talk that's going on right now is going to be irrelevant. And we might go into next offseason without any major issues, especially if the Seahawks are able to make a Super Bowl run. But if he is not able to make those adjustments and he struggles as a first-year coordinator, the protection continues to be a problem. Then again, as I said yesterday, some of the comments I interpreted yesterday, not saying I want to leave, but they were warning shots. If we don't fix things, then I will try to force my way out. I think we would be in that situation if the offensive coordinator isn't able to be that middleman that can really put together an offense that works well with both the coach and the quarterback.
Yeah, that's the thing, is he's going to have to, you know, be one heck of a middleman. As you said, you know, I also don't envy Shane Waldron in this situation, because you have an old school coach who has had incredible success. You know, obviously a national championship in college football, a Super Bowl championship in the NFL with a new age quarterback, a dynamic dual threat guy who basically thinks that he can make, and oftentimes is correct, can make every throw that the league has ever seen if he doesn't want to run the football. You know, and that's the thing, is that you have two very, very different perspectives here. And so Shane Waldron is going to have to try and marry those two, and that is going to be very difficult. Now, there's some reasons why I think that there can be a great deal of success. We've talked about it, that, you know, the Rams offense was more dynamic. It did incorporate a lot more shifts from the wide receivers. It got the quarterback who Jared Goff, of course, is not near the athlete that Russell Wilson is, but it got Goff moving around a little bit more and protect him a little bit in that regard. I think that you also look at the fact that the Los Angeles Rams do not have the most talented offensive line, and yet we're able to protect Jared Goff a lot more than Russell Wilson has been protected throughout his time. But again, as we talked about yesterday, it is a much more difficult proposition to try and block for a squirrely quarterback like Russell Wilson, one who is going to try to make all kinds of moves with his feet. Again, for Shane Waldron, I think that he is in a very difficult situation here. I think that he does have a little bit of it factor to him. He does have the experience to be able to help Seattle have some success. But at the same time, I am not one of those who just thinks that everything is going to be wonderful and Russell Wilson is going to be right back in that MVP conversation without some significant adjustments still being made to the personnel on the field for the Seahawks team moving forward.
Pretty safe to say, given the way that the first couple of days of this offseason have gone, that this is going to be a very eventful, a very long offseason if discussions like this are going to be persisting. And we don't know when Russell Wilson and Waldron are going to get a chance to work together on the field. It may not be until training camp because the COVID-19 pandemic is still causing problems. We'll just have to wait and see how this ends up playing out. But certainly right now, there are a lot of question marks. There's a lot of fascination about how this relationship is going to work and what it ultimately means for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, their futures together as a player and franchise. Coming up next in the second quarter, it's time for our Locked On Seahawks mailbag. We're going to be answering as many questions from you, the listeners, as we can. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck right locked in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Wednesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It's time for our Locked On mailbag segment. Usually we reserve this for Mondays, but since we are doing mock draft stuff on Mondays this time of year, we are moving the mailbag to our Wednesday show throughout the off season. Get back to the regular season. It'll return to our regular Monday programming. Let's get to your questions here. First one coming from Mr. Limited Tweets. With Rashad Penny coming back healthy, the promising, albeit small glimpses of Alex Collins and Bo Scarborough and the possibility of Chris Carson and or Carlos Hyde returning, is there really any way Seattle doesn't draft a running back in April?
Well, I think that if you bring back Chris Carson, then I don't think that Seattle would use one of their four draft selections on a running back because as Mr. Limited, cute name, by the way, kind of mentioned, you are presuming that Rashad Penny is going to be able to come back healthy. Obviously, as a former first-round pick, you need to take full advantage of those of the players that you drafted as early as somebody like Penny. And so even if Carson doesn't return, I think there's a possibility that Seattle would not use one of their currently four draft selections on a running back. But if he does not, I think that the chances increase that much more. I'm a big fan of Carlos Hyde still. I just don't know that he is the bell cow back. But frankly, again, considering what you have with Shane Waldron at the offensive coordinator position and the success that he had with multiple backs, in LA, I just don't know that it necessarily is a huge priority, especially when you look at this running back class. I am not a huge fan of this running back class. I think it's good. I just don't think that it's elite. And so I think if Seattle does invest in a running back, it might be very, very late, and hope that you find, a diamond in the rough, just like they did with Carson as a seventh rounder a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. If Chris Carson or Carlos Hyde's brought back with having Rashad Penny already on the roster, Alex Collins currently is unsigned. I wouldn't be surprised if they go back that well at some point. Bo Scarborough is not on the roster either. So they do have some question marks there, but if they bring back a number of these players, particularly Carson and or Hyde, then I don't see a reason to draft a running back at all because of their limited draft capital. Now, if they turn the four picks into like six or seven, then that changes things. If you add picks, if you trade a player away to add a pick, then certainly that could change things. The Seahawks have drafted a running back in three of the past. Actually, they've drafted a running back in all of the last four drafts. Chris Carson, Rashad Penny. They drafted Travis Homer, then last year DJ Dallas. So Josh Snyder has loved using draft picks on running backs. So I could see it happening then. But if they bring back one of those veterans and they only have four, five, even six picks, probably not a pressing need that they need to address with one of their few draft choices that they have at their disposal this year. Frost tweets, if you could pick one tight end not named George Kittle or Travis Kelce to be a Seahawk, who would you pick and why?
For me, it's Darren Waller. No question about it. I mean, I think that Darren Waller, you could throw right in there with Travis Kelce and George Kittle as being truly elite threats in the NFL. I mean, they're a bit, his ability to play as a traditional tight end as well as outside in the slot. To me, he is exactly the type of a third set of hands that the Seahawks are missing. And the fact that that they don't have that right now is why their offense continues to be one of the most predictable in all the NFL.
I would have probably picked Waller, but I'm going to go with Rob Gronkowski. Why not? I'd love to see it for 1 year. Rob Gronkowski obviously is now into his 30s, and he already has retired for a season. But I would love to see Gronk in the Seahawks offense because we know he can block. We know he can make plays as a receiver. We know he's a red zone threat. And it would just be a lot of fun to see Rob Gronkowski in Seattle. Not that that's ever going to happen, but certainly it'd be fun for a one-year spin to see Russell Wilson have a chance to throw to Gronk and maybe have a chance to win a Super Bowl with a different quarterback in the Pacific Northwest. Gary Gom tweets, with a third receiver being a need, is there someone in free agency Seattle could sign to be a number two and then move Tyler Lockett to the slot? I will put a caveat with this question. Tyler Lockett still plays a lot in the slot, but maybe this is emphasizing the need to get another weapon on the outside.
Yeah, I think that it is, and I think that is a significant need, as I just mentioned with the Darren Waller conversation just a moment ago. I think if you want to dream, then you can talk about a guy like an Allen Robinson. And then we talked about this yesterday, and Corbin, you made a really good point about how Seattle might be able to shift some money, and be able to create a lot more salary cap flexibility. And Allen Robinson is going to command a lot of money. But at the same time, after his struggles, in Jacksonville and in Chicago and the inconsistency at the quarterback position, then maybe he might be looking to try to give away a little bit of money for the opportunity to play for a true contender. He's only 28 years old. And to me, he would be exactly the type of more of a possession receiver that this team is lacking. I think that you have plenty of speed. I just think that you need some guys that can be reliable, and be able to come down with the grabs that sometimes guys like David Moore, Freddie Swain have been unable to bring down in the past.
If you're going to dream big, I've mentioned Chris Godwin and Allen Robinson. To me, those are two guys, if they hit free agency, Robinson's going to, but I don't know if Chris Godwin will hit free agency or not. The Buccaneers may lock him up before the new league year starts. They may use the franchise tag on him. It remains to be seen what Tampa Bay is going to do there. One of those two guys, that would be a pipe dream. But I talked about it earlier this week on the show. To me, with the depth of this free agent receiving class, there are some really good players that I think might be available. Looking at the cap crunch around the league, you might be able to sign them at a fairly affordable rate. I'm going to continue to be a T.Y. Hilton homer here. I think Hilton coupled with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf would be fantastic. Maybe you can get him on a 1 or 2 year deal that's a little bit more affordable than expected. He's a guy that can play out of the slot. He's still a weapon on the outside. Even at his age, he's going to be 32 soon, I believe. But He has enough speed still to be a threat over the top. He's a good route runner underneath. He can create after the catch. He would be a guy that would make a lot of sense to me. And Josh Reynolds, who played for Shane Waldron with the Rams, he's going to be a free agent. The Rams don't have much money to be able to spend to bring back their free agents. Maybe you want to bring in a familiar face to couple with your offense as you implement some of the things that the Rams use into Seattle's scheme. Josh Reynolds would allow them to do that, and he's only entering his fifth year, so he's still a fairly young player that's got room to grow. He's coming off a career year for receiving yardage, over 200 yards after the catch as well. Again, that is an area the Seahawks need to add talent. So those would be two names that jump out to me that I think actually would be feasible from a cost standpoint that maybe the Seahawks could go after. Next question here from Offseason Headlines tweets, what are a couple easy ways to open up cap, and what's one realistic player Seattle should target to boost the strength of the offensive line?
Well, you know, I'm not a bean counter, and so that's going to be more of a question for you, Corbin, as far as how Seattle might be able to create some cap space other than trading a veteran player. We've talked about that before. It's an ugly reality, but the Seattle may be forced to do something like that. To me, when I look at the offensive line, there's a lot of high-priced free agents out there that we could talk about. Similar to how if Allen Robinson, the wide receiver position, is a pipe dream, then I think that some of these top interior offensive linemen who have played in different systems than what Seattle is likely to run, I think they might be a pipe dream as well. To me, one guy who I think is intriguing is John Feliciano from Buffalo that can run downhill, that does have a little bit of positional versatility and is a nasty physical blocker at the point of attack. So he would be one. And then really quick to kind of go back to that wide receiver conversation earlier, I apologize, but if you're not going for a big, strong guy, and you said the word homer when you talked about T.Y. Hilton, so I'll be a homer here with John Ross as well as Will Fuller. Those are two true speed guys that I think you might be able to get on much cheaper contracts that absolutely have the talent to stretch the field that would make Russell Wilson, I think, a very happy man.
I'd be surprised if Fuller is in the Seahawks' price range. I anticipate there will be teams that are going to be very interested in him. John Ross, because he has not come close to meeting expectations with the Cincinnati Bengals, I think he's going to be affordable, and where better to get his career jump started again than coming back to the Pacific Northwest. So he certainly could be a name that is on Seattle's radar to couple with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. As far as answering the question here at hand, opening up cap space, the easiest way the Seahawks could do it is turning Russell Wilson, much of his base salary, into a signing bonus. Now there's repercussions to that. You're going to have bigger dead cap hits in future seasons as a result of that, but you can make that move and open up to $12 million in instant cap space for 2021, and you can use $12 million to sign a big-name player, like maybe go out and get a Corey Linsley, the center from the Packers. Maybe you could go after Joe Thuney of the Patriots. You could use some of your extra cap space coupled with that to bring in a big-name guard. There are a few guys out there that would make sense that could work in Seattle's scheme. And so those would just be a few of the linemen that would make sense. But the signing bonus, turning base salary to signing bonus, is the easiest way to create space. You could do some extensions too, where you ultimately treat it like a restructure and you're able to lower some of the cap hits by using a signing bonus in that capacity as well. So there's a number of different things they can do. They can create $20 to $30 million in cap space fairly quickly with a handful of moves. We'll just have to see what John Schneider decides to do. Seller Hands tweets, is this the year John Schneider needs to seriously look at using some draft capital to have a long-term backup solution for Russell Wilson, or does that just send the wrong message?
I think right now it actually sends the right message. Everybody was so shocked by what the Green Bay Packers did, right, by taking Jordan Love in the first round and really sending a message to Aaron Rodgers. And he turns around and has an MVP season and gets the Packers to the NFC Championship game. And for as brilliant as Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were obviously in winning the Super Bowl and beating Green Bay in Lambeau, I'm not so sure that game goes the same way in a traditional January game in Lambeau when the snow is usually flying and the crowd is usually pretty jacked up and obviously full attendance. And so that's the thing, is that maybe this is the year that you would be willing to draft a quarterback. I'm not saying with your first selection, 56 overall currently, but maybe somewhere in the middle round. Browns, there are some intriguing players out there. You know, Kellen Mond from Texas A&M, Ian Book from Notre Dame are two that who very much intrigue me a little bit. And I think they have some of the traits that, that might be successful in Seattle's offense, especially given all the talent that they have, but are clearly not starters right out of the box. And so they might be able to be that, that kind of perfect middle of being guys that, that could push Russell Wilson in future years, but aren't necessarily going to put enough pressure on him immediately to damage the potential relationship between Russell Wilson and the Seahawks franchise.
Yeah, you consider what he said yesterday. It might not sound like the most ideal move to use one of your few draft picks that you have on a quarterback, but I'm going to throw another name out there that I think could make a lot of sense that you might be able to get late on day three, and that's Jamie Newman, who played at the Senior Bowl and did not play last year for Georgia because he opted out of the season. But he's an athletic kid that can run the ball. He's got all the physical tools. His accuracy has been questionable at times, but we've seen this with Josh Allen in Buffalo. Even though most of the time quarterbacks that come in the league have accuracy issues that can't be corrected, Josh Allen showed it can, and Jamie Newman's got the physical tools as a player that could be developed. Again, I'd be surprised if the Seahawks do this, but that is just one name. Mond is another one from Texas A&M. Those are players that would fit your scheme that would make sense to maybe take a flyer on in day three and kind of give a nudge to Russell Wilson. Hey, we need you to step up your game. We just drafted a quarterback that we're going to have a chance to work with that isn't necessarily threatening your starting job, but it's just kind of a little bit of a reminder. He's been giving them subtle jabs with his words. The Seahawks as an organization can. Sometimes that backfires, but sometimes it can end up playing in your favor as well. So that is an interesting discussion going into the draft, whether they would consider doing that or not. Last question here from Kithland Tweets. Should the Seahawks sign A.J. Bouye? He was just released today by the Denver Broncos to save $12 million in cap space. We know the Seahawks have some corner issues they could be dealing with Shaquille Griffin and Quentin Dunbar both heading towards free agency, and Trey Flowers only has 1 year left on his contract. Bouye at one point was one of the better corners in football, but had kind of a disappointing couple seasons with the Jaguars and most recently with the Broncos.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that he has had some couple of disappointing seasons, as you mentioned, and I just don't think that is the kind of move that the Seattle is going to make. You know, they've had such success with late round picks in the secondary. I think that if you are going to allocate free agent or some of your salary cap dollars to cornerbacks, then retain the players that you already have. To me, I think that Shaquille Griffin is a terrific player, a relatively young player still, one who knows your scheme, has had success here. Obviously, his brother Shaquem still being on the team, you might be able to get a little bit of that quote-unquote hometown discount here with him as well. To me, that's the cornerback that I would be targeting if I was a Seahawks.
I look at Bouye, and he was a really good player a few years ago. He was a Pro Bowler for the Jaguars, but you just look at some of his stats the last couple of years. It is not trending in the right direction. 3 years ago, coming off that Pro Bowl season, his quarterback rating against him is 75.3. That's respectable. The next year, 2019, 101.5. And then this past season, playing in only 7 games for the Broncos after being acquired via trade, QB rating against him was 108.4, and he gave up 2 touchdowns and almost 300 receiving yards in just 7 games. And so at one point, he may have been a good player, but he's going to be turning 30 years old before the start of the 2021 regular season. I don't know that it's a good scheme fit. I would honestly rather just re-sign Quentin Dunbar on a cheap 1-year deal and see if you can work things out to be much better than last year instead of going out and signing somebody like Bouye. I think he can land on his feet somewhere and contribute. I just don't see him fitting with what the Seahawks need right now. When we come back in the third quarter, it's time to start our position-by-position off-season breakdown. We'll start at the defensive line, the defensive tackle position, going into the trenches. The Seahawks have a couple of pending free agents at that position and some big cap hits that they may need to discuss this offseason. Some tough decisions looming for John Schneider and company. We'll take a closer look when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Football season may be over, but plenty of great sports action is coming soon with the NBA season underway, March Madness on tap, and Major League Baseball closing in on spring training. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. Wednesdays on Locked On NFL, take a dive into the future of your favorite NFL franchises. Tony Wiggins and James Rapien are joined every week by a Locked On draft expert to talk prospects in the upcoming draft and young NFL players fresh into the league. Did your team have a big rookie performance this week, or are they shaping up to have a premier draft pick in the 2021 draft? Get everything you need Wednesdays on Locked On NFL. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get your podcasts. We've officially reached the offseason, full throttle, all 32 teams now being into draft and free agency mode. And with that being said, it's time for our position-by-position offseason breakdowns. We are going to start in the trenches on the defensive side of the football, one of the better position groups for the Seahawks. And honestly, Rob, going into the 2020 season, there were a lot of question marks about the Seahawks' defensive tackle depth, because behind Jaren Reed and Puna Ford, Brian Monet had only played in four games as a rookie. And then they had a couple of undrafted players, one of them being Cedric Lattimore, who had never played in an NFL game before. So there were a lot of experienced questions, and yet this really ended up being a position group that was a major strength for the Seattle Seahawks, who had a top five run defense. And one of the big reasons why is the guys manning the middle.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, just really impressed by the play of the youngsters, Puna Ford and Brian Monet on the inside specifically. To me, Jaren Reed is one of the Seattle's better players. He's also one of their better paid players, so that makes him a little bit more vulnerable than some of these other guys. But at the same time, Jaren Reed, to me, as I've talked about before, he is a dog. I mean, he is just physical. He is the kind of guy who has shown an ability to kind of raise his level of play when the lights are shining brightest. That goes back to his days at Alabama, as well as scouting him in person at the Senior Bowl. To me, he is the kind of guy that I think you can kind of build around a little bit. But again, because his salary is as big as it is, and because the Seahawks have had really impressive play by Puna Ford, of course, one of their undrafted free agents who has, you know, really risen in to be a quality starter, maybe challenging Reed at some point soon to be Seattle's best defensive tackle. Brian Monet is that just massive, massive man who can play that nose guard position as well as slide outside to play that five technique at times as well. Cedric Lattimore, another undrafted free agent who really is an impressive guy. He's got an interesting backstory to him, and we saw some splashes from him in the playoff loss to the Rams. And then even Miles Adams, you know, this is an undrafted free agent out of Rice, and he played up and down the line of scrimmage at Rice, and was signed actually as an undrafted free agent by the current Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Spent some time in Carolina. Seattle signed him to a futures contract. That's not a small deal. I mean, that's a significant thing. This is a talented guy. So you're right, Corbin. This is a underrated position group for the Seahawks. Still a relatively young one that I think is one of the real strengths for the squad.
And when you look at the contract situation at this position, that's where things start to get interesting, because all of the players we just mentioned are still under contract through at least this year. Brian Monet is under club control for another couple years. Puna Ford is going to be a restricted free agent. I would anticipate they're going to give him a high tender at minimum, if not extend him. Jaren Reed is really the big X factor here. And we saw what happened. This is something that you can use as an argument for keeping him or trading him. And it's one of those weird situations. Jaren Reed only had one sack before they got Carlos Dunlap. And then he really came to life after the arrival of Carlos Dunlap, finished the year with 6.5 sacks. And then he had two sacks in the playoff game against the Rams. So we saw that pass rusher from 2018 that had double digit sacks. We saw him return once Carlos Dunlap arrived, but we have to remember 2018, he had Frank Clark as his running mate on the outside that created opportunities for him as an interior pass rusher. We haven't seen him be able to consistently do that without the presence of a player like Clark or Dunlap. And Dunlap has a $14 million cap hit. Jaren Reed's cap hit is near $14 million. There's no way the Seahawks can keep both of those guys with those cap hits on the roster in 2021. They just can't afford to. You could certainly extend both players and that would lower the cap hit for this season. That's something the Seahawks may end up doing to keep both of them in the fold, but they also only have four draft picks, and Jaron Reed might be one of the few players they have that they can maybe move to get a day three selection, take most of that cap hit off the table, and then you can afford to keep Carlos Dunlap, who I believe, quite frankly, is playing a position that maybe is a bit more important. And quite frankly, the Seahawks have shown they are better at developing defensive tackles, players like Cedric Lattimore, for example, than they are at finding defensive ends that can rush the passer. That has been a much tougher thing for them to be able to develop. They've had to trade for outside players consistently for that reason. And so I guess that would be my argument why maybe Jaron Reed might be the player in this defense that, when it's all said and done, might get moved.
He could, just because he is relatively young at 29 years old. He does have a contract that pays him well, but I don't think exorbitantly so. I don't think that it's such a contract that you could not move him. And as you mentioned, I mean, Seattle has shown a nice track record of being able to develop talent. Frankly, it's easier in today's day and age to be able to find defensive tackles, because for a lot of guys, you might remember the Jaron Reed when he was drafted by the Seahawks. That was one of the knocks on him, was that he was not viewed as much of a pass rusher. He was viewed as just a run stuffer. I think that there's going to be a number of defensive tackles in this 2021 draft class that are also that type of a player that, you should be able to develop them a little bit and be able to get a little bit more of a pass rush if you are able to kind of hang your hat on your outside pressure, whether that be Carlos Dunlap, whether you believe that Daryl Taylor is going to be able to live up to his second round selection, whatever the case might be. If Seattle has enough outside pressure, they have enough talent on the inside, I think that it's going to be able to help them be able to develop somebody in that regard. And so that's the thing. You're absolutely right. I think that Jaron Reed and Carlos Dunlap are almost like it's going to be fascinating to see how they are able to manage that. If they can get both of those players back and be able to extend them, that might be your easy solution to how you can basically fix the entire squad in terms of the salary cap. But there's also a possibility you have to move one or both of them, or at least move on from one or both of them. And so again, to me, that is the perfect position for us to start our positional breakdown here, because Jaron Reed, that the spotlight is going to be very much on him throughout the entire offseason.
And I think the other looming factor here, I mentioned it earlier in the segment, but the factor that may push John Schneider to be aggressive trying to see if he can move Jaron Reed is the emergence of Puna Ford, because early in his career, Puna Ford was playing nose tackle primarily, but we have seen getting more reps at the three tech. We have seen him become a much more reliable pass rusher, especially the second half of the 2020 season. Pro Football Focus had him down for 28 quarterback pressures last year, easily a career high. We knew the athlete that we were talking about with Puna Ford, but he wasn't able to really showcase those pass rushing skills until this season, and it really started to come to life. I could see him being a guy that gets 5 or 6 sacks in 2021, and that's why I mentioned the extension idea. Rather than using a second round tender on him and then having to worry about him hitting unrestricted free agency next year, to me, Puna Ford, he's a younger player. I think he is a better overall player that still has a ceiling he has not reached compared to Jaron Reed. I think Puna Ford is the one that I would want to extend long-term if I have to make a choice there. And I think if you do it now, you can maybe get him a few million dollars cheaper than if you try to wait till next year when he becomes unrestricted as a free agent. The market may make it difficult for the Seahawks to re-sign him. And so that would be a move that I would be making right now. I would try to see if I can not only get him locked up for next year, but can I give him a long-term extension and make him my three tech and a guy that can play nose in a pinch as well. You got him and Brian Monet. They could draft a guy. And of course, I'll go back to Cedric Lattimore as well. Loved what I saw in his debut. And he is a player that the organization seems to be high on going into 2021. All those factors I mentioned, particularly Puna Ford, could force John Schneider into some action. And maybe then it would make sense to move a player like Jaron Reed that's done a lot of good things for you on your defensive line.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is that, you know, one of the things I always try to look at when I'm, trying to anticipate what teams are going to do, not just the Seahawks, but teams all across the league, what they're going to do on draft day is who are their positional coaches that they really believe in. And Clint Hurt, of course, is one of those positional coaches that the Seahawks have very much prioritized. That's why he is, an actual assistant head coach, besides just being the positional coach. And so he carries a lot of weight in that room. And so I think that if he is very, very confident in Puna Ford, Cedric Lattimore, Miles Adams, as we talked about a moment ago, then maybe that does make Jaron Reed that much more expendable. Again, in my opinion, I still believe that Jaron Reed is the best defensive tackle on this roster. I would like to see him remain in Seattle. I think that he still has some untapped potential as well. But again, he's being paid very, very well also. And so again, when you're up against the salary cap, the way that the Seahawks are, you might have to kind of cut some bait with some of these players to be able to move forward.
Yeah, this is going to be one of the big storylines to watch. Jaron Reed versus Carlos Dunlap, because those two both have really large cap hits. It's going to be very difficult to keep both of them. If you extend both of them, as I said, that is an option. You could lower the cap hit. That does push more cap burden onto the 2022 season, and then you have some other tough choices to make, but certainly there are ways to navigate. We'll have to see what the Seahawks decide to do. In a perfect world, they could keep both those guys together and even bring back Benson Mayoa. I just don't know that they're going to be able to do all of that given the cap constraints and the needs they have at other positions of the roster, like, say, Russell Wilson would know, the offensive line. And so this is going to be, again, one of the big storylines to watch. But as it currently stands, this is one of the better position groups the Seahawks have, with no pending free agents, aside from Puna Ford being a restricted free agent. This group is intact going into 2021. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you subscribe to your podcast, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on a Thursday episode, we're going to continue our rookie spotlight series with Colby Parkinson, and it's Tinder Thursday. We'll have some upcoming unrestricted free agents that the Seahawks have to make a decision on whether to re-sign them or to let them walk. We'll be swiping right or swiping left. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.